This is KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. We're on Twitter at KUOW. We are in the high holy days of the Jewish calendar. Yom Kippur is coming up this Saturday. This year's observance, they feel fraught to the senior rabbi at Seattle's Temple Derech Sinai. Rabbi Daniel Wiener's here to discuss what to do about anti-Semitism 2017. Welcome back, Rabbi. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Nazism seems to be on the rise beyond the march in Charlottesville. Your synagogue was vandalized this year. The Mercer Island Jewish Community Center got bomb threats. There's a neo-Nazi group growing in the Seattle area that we're just hearing more about. Why do you think this is happening now?
You know, unfortunately, I think it's a confluence of a lot of different events, but chief amongst them, unfortunately, and I think that the timing bears this out, is when you have great equivocation coming from the highest reaches of government and power. That sends a message, whether tacit or otherwise, to those who feel now newly empowered and newly equipped with a license to express views that they hadn't expressed before, or maybe explore hateful pathways that they felt were not open to them previously.
The great equivocation. We're talking here about President Trump and you on and more. Well, maybe I'll ask you. Are you referring directly to President
Trump? I think the equivocation around Charlottesville sent a pretty powerful message and affirmed what many in the most extreme reaches of white supremacy, you know, kind of embraced. But I think there were members of the administration that also, you know, were of that ilk, maybe not as extreme as avowed neo-Nazis, but certainly those who spoke in coded language that offered aid and comfort to those who possess those kinds of hateful views.
You helped President Trump out with that. You wrote a kind of an alternate what I wish President Trump had said after Charlottesville, of course. Yeah. You called anti-Semitism a regenerated virus.
Absolutely. I think, unfortunately, it's like other viruses where it lays dormant in many societies, and with the right circumstances and the right messaging and the right coding, it flares up. And I think the viral analogy is an apt one for things like racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and anti-Semitism.
Do you think we should talk now about the origins, the generation of that virus? And talk about history and bring it up to
today? I think,
you
know, it's hard to pinpoint one specific origin, but absolutely, I think talking about it more explicitly, calling it out for what it is, shining the disinfecting light of media and of culture upon it is a critical thing to do. I think viruses, figurative and literal, flourish in the darkness and in the moisture of toxicity and hate.
So then what do you think that virus, that anti-Semitism is about at its root? What's going on?
I think it gets to the most essential and fundamental fear of the other and distrust of the other that unfortunately is somewhat hardwired into our psyche as human beings. But religion and culture and philosophy have attempted to get us to transcend that, to transcend our baser selves. Judaism, for example, at its core is about transcending our basest selves as human beings and aspiring to be, as our tradition talks about it, a little lower than the angels.
Talking about anti-Semitism on the march, including locally, did you read about the Swedish man who went undercover at the Seattle white supremacist conference here?
Yeah, that piece in the New York Times,
yeah.
and especially the chilling video that accompanied it, were
these are secretly recorded videos of white supremacists talking about their dreams of ethno states
when they don't feel like they're being monitored.
Yeah.
I found it to be incredibly disturbing and chilling, and for a lot of reasons, but not least of which is because of the kind of pedestrian nature of those individuals. I mean, it's kind of like what they're saying about the Richard Spencer type white supremacists. They're wearing, you know, Dockers and Oxford shirts and seem to be reasonable in what they're saying, unless you're able to really scratch the surface and push and understand that This is just a new iteration of a long-standing hatred.
Yeah, I want to talk about that seeming to be reasonable. Since we're discussing this man who went undercover, who I interviewed this week, Patrick Hermanson, he describes the Northwest Forum as being a smaller version of the London Forum. He talks about all these different groups. And he says this local neo-Nazi group started a couple months ago and has grown considerably. Does any of that surprise you?
I guess I'm shocked but not surprised. Again, I think the current climate is empowering and extending tacit approval to individuals who felt that they needed to keep their noxious views under wraps, and now they feel newly empowered to express them. What's really disturbing also is I think it's attracting individuals, the disillusioned, the disempowered, who, because of their extreme circumstances in their lives, whether it's economic or class or what have you, are resonating with this message. And I think we need to really be careful. This is not just a group of marginalized fringe individuals. It's starting to pass a bit into the mainstream, and we have to encounter it, and we have to confront it, and we have to isolate it and marginalize it.
Hermanson describes a white nationalist group called Cascadia that wants to buy land in eastern Washington and create a white society. You just talked about being careful. I want to know, Rabbi, how seriously do you take these groups? I mean, we're all hearing about Weimar Germany, right? What's the threat level to you and your congregation?
I mean, I think that's an important point to bear in mind, is that we should not overreact to this and over-ascribe historic analogies to this. We are not living in Weimar Germany. So far, the white supremacists do not have the kind of backing and momentum that Hitler and the beer halls had in Munich. And also, we live in the United States of America in 2017, and there still are, and it's important to bear in mind, there still are institutions and structures and statutes that protect us. And I think, if anything, even beyond confronting extremism, I think many of us were complacent about democracy. Many of us were complacent about the freedoms that we have enjoyed, and complacent about the trajectory that America seemed to be going into with Barack Obama's presidency. And I think we have to remember that that democracy is tenuous, and it can be very easily corrupted, tainted, undermined. And that, I think, is the ultimate lesson. It's less about how do we confront every marginalized person who, you know, wants to express themselves, and more, let's ensure that the institutions and the structures and the laws that make our democracy what it is are reinforced and continue to be strengthened and looked to, because that is going to be the point of reference that is going to protect all of us.
When you make it clear this is not Weimar Germany, we are living in the United States, are there members of your Seattle congregation who tell you they think you're being complacent?
No, you know, I don't think so. I think people do. I have a large congregation.
Yes.
You know, now we're going to say this, and I'm sure I'll hear from somebody. Mm. But, you know, I think it's more of a generational thing, quite frankly. I think older people who either were Holocaust survivors or people who were the children of Holocaust survivors and had this experience more imminently in their lives, you know, I think they perhaps are seeing greater danger and fear complacency more than I think next generation folks who feel more secure in the protections that thus far America is granting all of us.
Are you having these conversations in your congregation? You know, I'm asking you about other people's opinion, but is this a live topic, and in what way are people talking about it?
I think if you look on most websites for synagogues, either from Rosh Hashanah last week or Yom Kippur, you're going to see that most rabbis have talked about these issues. Yeah. That certainly we want to focus on the transcendent elements of the high holidays, a sense of return to our best selves, an accounting of the soul, all of those things. But certainly Charlottesville and what it symbolized casts a looming shadow over this year's high holidays in particular. And I think most rabbis, including myself, are going to be speaking about these elements in some way.
This is Rabbi Daniel Wiener, senior rabbi at Temple Dehersh Sinai here in Seattle. Would you remind us what happened at your synagogue on Capitol Hill this spring?
Yeah.
And we can talk about how you responded?
No, of course. Unfortunately, in March, an individual on one of the extended sacred spaces buildings of our campus wrote a graffiti that wasn't just your kind of typical drive-by graffiti. This person wrote, "The Holocaust is fake history," turning the S's into dollar signs. So in one fell swoop, not only engaging in Holocaust denial, which requires some degree of knowledge and background, but also appealing to that canard about Jews being obsessed with money and utilizing one of the current tropes of our current commander-in-chief to describe something that you disagree with as not different or wrong, but rather fake.
And you and I talked very soon after that incident, and one of the things you told me was that you asked your congregation to leave that graffiti up there for a while, right?
Yes, please. We left it up for about a day or so, and one of the key reasons is I wanted people to know that this exists, even in azure blue Seattle, that there are elements, there are individuals who feel this way and who feel newly empowered over the last year or so. And I think it's important to call that out, to be aware of it, and to not try to sweep it under the rug.
What do you tell your congregants is the right response? Not that you dictate to them, but when you talk about what do we do, this has been a big debate, how to respond to anti-Semitism right in azure blue Seattle. And what do you think?
I think the response is what it's always been, but even more concerted because of recent events, and that is just vigilance. That it's more than not being complacent. It's being careful. It's being thoughtful. It's reading. It's understanding. It's every individual needs to equip themselves, but particularly those in vulnerable communities. Equip yourselves with the knowledge and the context and the recourse to respond to these things, to not allow those who propagate these views to feel like, A, they're acceptable, or B, that there's great apathy in the broader society that will permit this stuff to just happen. I think constant vigilance and proportionate but definitive reaction and response, either officially or even informally, is a critical way that we need to respond and seek recourse.
I interviewed a local anti-fascist who said that violence is not his first choice, but that he defends the legitimacy of street violence against neo-Nazis and white supremacists. Where do you come down?
I absolutely disagree with that. I think you had a UW professor on here last week who characterized it beautifully, which is it is one of the classic strategies of fascist groups to try to evoke violence from their opponents so that they can justify their violence and even more disturbingly justify security measures that perhaps compromise the freedoms and the laws and values that we hold dear. And so absolutely, if we've ever needed to embrace Gandhi and Dr. King's message of nonviolence, not only strategically, but also morally and spiritually, this is the time.
As you know, the anti-fascist argument is that when we say neo-Nazi views are just another kind of controversial free speech, then we make it normal.
Not responding violently does not preclude calling it out for the extreme, unique, idiosyncratic kind of toxicity that it is. Absolutely, we need to call it out, and it's not just another kind of free speech. It's a free speech that, if we are true to our values in terms of free speech, that we need to permit. But it doesn't mean that it needs to go unanswered, and it certainly doesn't mean that free speech that crosses the boundary toward incitement of violence should not be confronted. That is the red line in our country. Free speech is not absolute. It is constrained when it engenders a clear and present danger.
So in the news media, when we cover the resurgence of anti-Semitism, are there people you think should not be allowed to speak?
No, I think everybody should be allowed to speak again within the confines of not fomenting violence. But it is one of the great gifts, but also one of the great challenges of a truly free society is you need to endure speech that you hate, dislike, have contempt for. But the cure to bad speech is not constrained speech. It's more speech. It's better speech. It's answering thoughtfully and clearly. That is the key thing. If we start going down the slippery slope of constraining certain speech that we just find distasteful, as is happening sometimes on college campuses around the country, that is a slippery slope that leads to some really probably unintended bad consequences.
So you wouldn't want to see, for example, the University of Washington keep right-wingers off campus?
No, absolutely. I think the best thing to do is let them speak and then within that context confront their ideas and publicly challenge those ideas and hopefully provide a more thoughtful and cogent alternative to bad speech. I think in some ways, again, the disinfecting light of public scrutiny is one of the key tools that a democracy has to eradicate this kind of evil.
Seattle Rabbi Daniel Wiener from Temple to Hurst Sinai. I think every time you and I see one another, we say, oh, let's talk sometime when it's not just about fear and despair.
Please.
So will you leave us on a different note as we head into Yom Kippur? What do you want to say to our listeners now?
Here's the different note, and it's something that was mentioned by the evangelical pastor Jim Wallace when he was in town a few weeks ago, and that is, I think there is a an insightful duality. Over the last month and a half or so, Charlottesville was horrific, but proximate to Charlottesville was the response of the entire nation to Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. And if you read the stories, particularly of Harvey, that have been covered in the media, the way in which people of all backgrounds put themselves out for one another, affirmed their common humanity to help one another in the most dire of circumstances, I thought was not only a wonderful counterpoint to Charlottesville, which happened just a little while before, or right around there, but I think it affirms the larger message that most of us feel an incredible amount of compassion and mutual respect and love for one another, and we can't let the marginalized outsiders skew our sense of reality and what it's really about.
Rabbi Daniel Wiener, thank you for this. And what's the phrase? Shana Tova?
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
Not just a happy year, but Jewishly a good year, which is a different thing.
How is good different from happy?
Good means to pursue goodness for yourself and the world. Happy is just a fleeting kind of thing where, you know, New Year's Day, you know, it's kind of over.
Shana Tova. Good to see you.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you. KUW is The Record. Back in a moment.